Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, it's time to wind down the year and dedicate this show to Jeff Babineau as we welcome renowned golf writers Alex Maselli and Gary D'Amato. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, we wanted to dedicate this show to a longtime friend and a great golf writer, Jeff Babineau. And I talked to Babs a number of weeks ago. And obviously, for those who know him, he passed recently. And I said, Babs, I need this information about what's going on in this part of the world, the golf world. And he said, well, I'm going to defer. And I'm going to tell you to call Alex Maselli, because this is the guy that knows everything that's going on when it relates to the game of golf. And so I did. And Alex came on the show, and it was great to talk to him. So we're going to do a year in review, and there's so much to talk about. And Alex has agreed to come back on the show, and I appreciate it very much. Met Alex, I don't know, 25 years ago or so when he was the man behind golf.com, and he got it on, and then he wanted to be a golf writer, and he just went from there. And first of all, Alex, welcome back to the show. It's great to talk with you as always, and you know, congratulations on all your accomplishments and where you've gotten to. And for Jeff Babineau to say about that about somebody when he was a fantastic writer in his own right really speaks volumes to what you have done.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, you know, Babs was doing other things now, and so he really wasn't following it as closely as he would have. So, I mean, I appreciate that. It's one of those things where you've got to spend a lot of time on it now because it's so complicated. We're all trying to still figure out what's going on. And even if I told you what's going on, I wouldn't trust what I told you. So it's one of those kind of things.
Yeah, it is a pretty wacky world of golf these days. You've got Liv on one side, and Greg Norman supposedly is walking out the door, which to a lot of people's happiness. And then you've got Jay Monahan and Ponder Vedra trying to figure out what's going on. And I think he's looking for a CEO. So between those two guys, professional golf is certainly in flux.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, the PGA of America just named a new CEO in Derek Sprague. The LPGA is looking for a new commissioner. The PGA of America has got some issues with the Ryder Cup and how they're going to handle that with the American players. Then you got that doesn't even have touched the PGA Tour and Live and the PIF, the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. So you got all that going on, and as well as what you've just indicated about this, looking for a CEO for. We think PGA Tour Enterprises, but it's unclear. Even the press release wasn't clear exactly what they're looking for, but they're looking for a CEO. They said that. And then, yeah, Greg Norman at the Live Golf, he'll still be around, but he's not going to be the guy running the ship. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not sure he's been running the ship for a couple years, actually.
Good point there, because the Saudis are heavily involved, and a couple names have been mentioned to me and about who's really behind the curtain on that. But it's still a competing tour, although everybody's trying to talk nice, I guess, and try to figure out how to bring it together. In your realization, the way you see things, is that a true possibility? Could that actually happen?
I think over time. I mean, as you know, time heals all wounds. I think over time, this will probably find a way to work itself together, just like the NBA and the ABA did, like the NFL and the AFL did, the NHL, the same situation. I think over time, it will work itself out. The question is what are you looking for? What are you trying to create in the short term? What are you trying to create in the long term? And I think that's the complicated part of the equation because, you know, world golf has always been what Greg Norman had prophesized. That's what he was always trying to do way back in the day. And even though Tim Fincham said no, it was only because it was Greg that was saying yes. And Tim wanted to do his own thing, and he did. He tried, at least with the World Golf Championships. But in the end, that didn't, it didn't really work out for many different reasons, mostly because American golfers on the PGA Tour didn't want to travel, didn't want to really expand and extend the reach of professional golf, and they were more interested in staying, traveling from Phoenix, Arizona, Los Angeles, than traveling from New York City to London. And so because of that, World Golf really didn't survive. But because of the money involved now, the absolute unbelievable amounts of money that's going to be thrown at a game that really doesn't have a TV audience practically, which is where most sports get their money. It is just crazy. And you know what's interesting? You see people like Bryson DeChambeau, who was basically shunned from the PGA Tour by a lot of players, who's really probably the most popular player in professional golf right now, going to play in India because Abe Anser, who plays on his team on LIV, asked him to come. You know, how many American players would jump on a plane and say, yeah, I'll come to India and play to try to, to build up the scale and build up the interest of golf in your country? I mean, that's just it's unheard of. And I think that's what LIV brings. LIV brings the ability for these players to travel all around the world and give that exposure, the exposure that used to happen back in the days of Jack and Arnold and Gary, when they used to fly all over the world, showing their wares and getting people interested in golf. We got to a point here somewhere where we got too selfish on the PGA Tour side, and it's hurt them. And I think that's why LIV had an ability to go ahead and create something, which isn't perfect, but they had the ability to create something that gives them the opportunity to make it more of a world golf tour, and that's what they're going after, and that's what the PGA Tour wants in the end.
So you've written for Golf Week, Sports Illustrated Golf. You've got your, I don't want to misspeak here and say morning read, but you've got your newsletter that goes out and such. And I saw an article not too long ago, pretty recently, about the amount of money that Commissioner Jay Monahan makes. And I think it was $23 million. I don't want to misspeak because you wrote it and such. And I think the part of the article that I found most interesting and appealing was the question that was posed, is he worth it? You know, and I just think that was really, really straight to the point.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's been easy for me to pick on Jay and the PGA Tour in this situation for many reasons, but that's a fair question. I mean, $24 million is a lot of money for anybody. And I'm not saying that a commissioner of the PGA Tour or the head of the NBA or the commissioner of the NFL isn't deserving of those dollars. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that when you look at them, are they doing the job that they should be compensated at that level? That's really what we're looking at. And I think in Jay's case, he's done a relatively poor job over the last couple of years. And the fact that they would be compensating him at that level seems to be a bit embarrassing.
Well, and it is become all about money on the PGA Tour, because now we're looking at a separation of the ranks, right? It was 100, the top 125, and then now it's the top 25, and everybody else fends for themselves. And, oh, it's so difficult to get on the tour anymore. And who is going to watch a tournament that has the lesser-known guys? Because to your point about the TV thing earlier, viewership, I haven't seen the numbers, but I have to believe it's down, because the product on there is not always top notch.
You know, there's two things about that. One, the product is a combination of the players themselves, the athletes, and the announcers, and the product from the production standpoint. All that combines into what you have when you're showing it to a viewer. And all three of those are bad. Some, and on NBC it's worse, and on CBS. But bottom line is that it's just bad, period. And I've always said, take the best baseball announcer, the best guy, Vin Scully,
sure,
who actually did golf for NBC a long time ago. If you put a Vin Scully in the booth, he automatically makes the product better, because he's not trying to tell you And if, even if you listen to Vince Scully on radio, he's not trying to tell you what's going on in the game. He will get there if it's necessary. But he's talking to you. He's giving you stories while things are happening. I don't need somebody, especially on a television broadcast, I don't need somebody to tell me it's 160 yards when I got a graphic up there saying it's 160 yards. I don't need them to tell me. I need them to tell me something other than that. I need them to provide me with some guidance, something interesting. I get very little of that on a PGA Tour broadcast. The other end of the equation, when you were talking about the players, you know, when I was starting this game and learning about this game from a coverage standpoint, the one thing that was kind of beat into my head by the PGA Tour themselves is that the commissioner's job, his number one job or their number one job, is to create playing opportunities for their players. That's gone by the wayside, and nobody's even talking about it.
It's unbelievable. You and Bobby Clampett would have a great conversation about it. Bobby was on the show last week, and he was a longtime CBS announcer. And Frank Cherkinian, he was known as the Ayatollah, and he ran a tight ship, and he expected those guys. He says, don't tell me what I can see. Don't tell me that it's, you know, the 160 yards. I can see that, right? And that's to your point. And it was about telling them more. If you're a professional golfer and you've played at that level, you've experienced things that other people have not. That hence the reason that you're on that broadcast. But these days, they try to make broadcasters out of people that have no training. And even, yes, I know that they run their tests and they run, you know, they do the tournaments off air and things like that. But that doesn't mean just because you got a couple reps in, it's like saying that a 6-year-old can get out there on the amateur junior tour after hitting 6 balls. It doesn't translate.
And the other part of this now is, and it's starting on the Champions Tour, and I'm sure it's going to grow into the PGA Tour coverage, is they're now going to start doing Champions Tour coverage where they're not even going to let guys on site. They're going to be doing it from a room in this brand-new facility they built in Ponte Vedra. So here you are, 4 walls, a bunch of monitors, never going on the range, never talking to players, never knowing what's going on because you're not there. And somehow you're supposed to be insightful.
Yeah, I've done games like that. Like during COVID, I had the opportunity to broadcast some games like that. And it's a totally different. You've got to really be really, really good because there's no atmosphere around you. Like you said, the 4 walls. I'm in the studio right now, and there's actually glass in front of me. I can see the guys, but the other 3 walls are just soundproof walls. So I've got to bring a different energy to it because I'm talking with the guests. I've got to engage with the guests. That's my concentration. But when you're trying to do that with a golf tournament and you've got different moving parts, that's really, really difficult. It's difficult for any sporting event. But golf can be some of the most boring sports to watch to begin with. So you've got to really be special broadcaster to be able to elevate that in a room.
Yeah, and that's not happening. It's just not happening.
Well, I feel like they're going the wrong way, and you know, we can obviously do a whole show just on the broadcasts these days. Their lack thereof, and Liv is trying to work their deals and such. But you know, we've only got Alex for half of the show, so we don't want to take his time doing that way. But Player of the Year, obviously Scottie Scheffler, unbelievable performance. Tiger and Rory have gotten together for this TGL. A simulator league. Break it down a little bit more for Alex, because I'm still confused as a lot of the listeners are.
First I want to say this. I want to give it the benefit of the doubt. So I've tried not to be write anything about it that's negative or necessarily positive. I just want to see it and see what it is, and then B, what the longevity of it will be. I mean, ultimately, it's got to be something that's so compelling that people are going to want to play it. But I think the other part of that is it has to be something where the players want to continue to do it. I mean, I think these guys that are multimillionaires, for them to have to show up in West Palm Beach on every Monday or Tuesday, whatever day it is, and they have to play during weeks of when they have tournaments going on. It's going to be interesting to see what happens as we get into, you know, month 2 and month 3, how much you're going to want to really participate.
Absolutely. So says Alex Maselli, who is a renowned golf writer. He's with us for another segment. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Annika Sorensen, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
And we're back with Alex Maselli. Known this guy for a long time, the professor. He has earned it, studious as can be, and he's a sharp-dressed man. That's kind of how you know him on the tour and such. And, you know, the way you rose to the ranks, and I think back on our first meeting, I can't remember if it was Alexandria or Arlington in Virginia, and what you had going on with golf.com to where you are now, one of the leaders covering golf, which is saying a lot, not just the quality. I'm talking about just the fact that there aren't a lot of entities covering the game of golf anymore at the tournaments.
No, that's right. I guess it's a longevity thing. I somehow survived to the end. But, you know, when I first started, there were probably, if it was a big event, not a major, but a big event, like maybe let's say Doral, there's probably 10 or 15 newspapers there from all over the country. When I started again, because it was golf.com, there weren't really any internet sites except for me. But there were newspapers, there were magazines, you know, Golf Digest, Golf Magazine. You had Golf Week. So they were all there. And then it would have been L.A., it would have been Atlanta, it would have been Dallas, it would have been D.C., it would have been New York, it would have been Chicago. I mean, you know, maybe Columbus. It just depended. But there'd be, and then of course in Florida, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Jacksonville, they would all be there. Tampa, St. Pete, you know, so they'd all be at this event. And it's like where that was to where it is today. If I went to that, if not Doral, but let's take Arnold Palmer Invitational, which is a pretty big event, you'll still have Digest and Golf Week there, but you'll have, I don't know, maybe one newspaper from Orlando, and you're not going to really have anybody else. There's not going to be anybody else except for Doug Ferguson. So that's where we are now.
Not, wow, that's pretty crazy. I'm glad you mentioned Doug because he's been writing a long time for AP, and you know, it's astounding. But the powers that be wonder why they're not getting more coverage. You know, it's that disconnect. You know, because publications just, I mean, you know, we're dedicating this show to Jeff Babineau, a longtime writer for Golf Week, but eventually Golf Week severed ties and for him and other people, longtime golf writers. And you scratch your head and say, how are guys like this out of work in this industry? Because the game's still going on. What is going on?
Yeah, you know, it's just, The game is not the same game. The coverage is not the same coverage. The entities themselves, be it the PGA America, the USGA, or the PGA Tour, the LPGA Tour even, they don't understand the cost of trying for a newspaper or a magazine to cover their events with the rental car and the hotel and getting there and so forth and so on. I mean, it's outrageous how expensive it is to do that. And unlike, you know, if I was going to cover a Lakers-Clippers game, I'd just go to the game, stay the night maybe, and I'm out of there. Well, in a golf situation, you've got four rounds of tournament golf, and you got one or two days before that. So you got, you know, 5 or 6 days of coverage. It's a lot more than just going to cover a basketball game or a football game or a baseball game.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Ryder Cup. It's at Bethpage in New York, and I know I got an email that said rooms are about $350 a night, and you know, yeah, multiple times, what have
you.
Plus,
out at Kennedy Airport.
Yeah, exactly. Getting around and yeah, right. Then that's not even close to where you need to be venue wise. It's, you know, I don't know. It gives you a headache if you think about it too long. So from that standpoint, but yeah, there should be some things. But you've been working with the Golf Writers Association member, an officer for a number of years, and you know, obviously you see it firsthand because you guys deal directly with the entities, the USGA and PGA of America, et cetera, when it comes to those kind of things.
It's just, you know, it's just one of those things. I guess it's just the growing period of where we are in the world of sports, and you know, there's no way to change it, I guess. And the sad part is that you actually get there, and then you don't have access, or you're restricted in some way, shape, or form, and it's like, why am I even here?
Yeah. True.
And that's the worst part of it all. I mean, it's just like, fine, if I made the effort to get here, then let's make sure that it's well worth my while to be here. And in some cases, that's just never the case.
Well, Alex, it's been great to catch up. And thanks so much for bringing everybody up to date on all those things going on. So much more. And Alex will spend more time with us in 2025. But Alex Maselli, my guest on T-Dub, Keith Jones. Heading to the bottom of the hour, Gary D'Amato, the president of the GWAA, when we come back from this break.
The Dalai Lama. If I'm on a first tee with him, I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And we are back, and as I mentioned before in our first segment with Alex Maselli, that we are dedicating this broadcast to Jeff Babineau, commonly known as Babs, an all-around great guy, an officer with the Golf Writers Association of America for many years, heavily involved. The Golf Writers Association was founded in 1946, dedicated to the improvement of working conditions for golf writers and sometimes broadcasters too, striving toward the advancement of press facilities at tournaments, hotel accommodations, local transportation, interviews with players, and everything that Alex Maselli said that the organizations were making difficult for players. So we said, you know what? Another guy that knew Babs very well and worked with him extensively is the president of the Golf Writers Association of America. The new one, yes, because we had Beth Ann Nichols on prior, weeks ago when she was president. So we said, you know, Gary D'Amato's president now, so let's give Gary some airtime because, you know, amazingly, as we found out over the years, writers like to talk. So, Gary, welcome to the show. Thanks for making time, El Presidente.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'll tell you what, though, it'll be Alex Maselli's a tough act to follow.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because as I told Alex, both on this show and before, I was looking for somebody earlier in the year to update on a couple of things going on in the world of golf. So I reached out to Babs, and he said, well, you know what? I'm working on a couple other things here. Give Alex Maselli a call. And I've known Alex for a long time. I started this show back in 1998, and that was back when Alex was starting or was working golf.com. So we met. Yeah. This show is based out of D.C., and he was based out of the D.C. area. We met in Virginia. And so I've known the professor that long, and he's really just taken this game by the tail and just continues to rise through the ranks, which is saying a lot these days, Gary, because golf writers are becoming like the dinosaur. And I know Dan Jenkins would have really thought that would, you know, he wouldn't see that in his time. Luckily, he didn't see it in his time, but we're seeing it in our time, and it's concerning.
It is. You know, I was just thinking before I came on the show, I was thinking about a little bit of history of the Golf Writers Association. And when I joined in the early 1990s, it was basically, you know, 98% of us in the Golf Writers Association of America were newspaper golf writers. And today, when I look at our membership, we have about 500 members. I don't know what the percentages are, but I'll bet newspaper reporters, I'll bet it's fewer than 15%. And, you know, we've branched out now. We have bloggers that are members of our association, photographers, people who just write internet columns, influencers. So the Golf Writers Association has changed dramatically, as just about everything else has over the last 30 years.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to hear all those terms that you mentioned in there and the fact that you would open the doors. Because I remember, I never really aspired. I've been a member now for a number of years, and I like what the organization's doing, and I like to support it, and I've had a lot of, way before the guys said, okay, you guys, you know, give me three references, and you can get into the organization. I've had so many writers over the years on this show. It's a who's who's kind of when it comes down to that situation, because guys, they're there. They were in the front lines even before we went out, and we did a lot of tournaments. We were traveling around a lot. We used to do a tournament update on this show every week, and That went by the wayside many years ago because people would just go to their phone, which really isn't a phone. It's a computer with a phone and a camera for those playing along at home, and just get to find out. They could tell me before I could tell them. So we went away from that, gave that extra time to our guests, and we've been going at it ever since. And it's great that way. But that's the ever-changing world we're in. And even from the media coverage, I mean, who would have thought you could say the word influencer in the same sentence that you would say the legitimate writer? I remember when the blogosphere happened, right? And there were some really good writers that were discovered through the blogs. But, you know, it's like this is a national radio broadcast. This is a broadcast, right? It goes up on the satellite, goes out to a bunch of stations across the country. And it's different than a podcast, right? A podcast, you know, they'll turn this in. Don't get me wrong. They'll turn this into a podcast.
Sure.
And Ryan Balogi actually does that for the Golf News Net, and people can get it anytime, which I think is great because that's encapsulation and everything is free flowing these days. You grab what you want and when you want it, and that a la carte type of thing. It used to be like we went to the smorgasbord. You know, you were there, and you know, but that was when it was limited. You could get what you want during that period of time. That was it. That has gone away as well. So the fact that the organization has been smart enough to branch out and allow other people, the likes of yours truly in, as is appreciated. But also, I think along the way, and you've probably noticed this during your presidency, you can get these ideas from any place. That's why somebody comes to me with an idea for the show, we're in it by the guys, and they're like, I think this is a good idea. Or they bring an idea. I'm like, well, of course, we go at this angle. But you know what? We're gonna peel back the layers. We're going to give Gary D'Amato a lot more time than he's going to get in 5-minute interview. Because, you know, I don't need name, rank, and serial number from people, right? People, you get that anywhere, right? Let's talk. Let's give people time enough to be able to talk about what they have going on and everything else. And, you know, I know for you, somehow you wanted to be the president of the Golf Writers Association of America. Some people scratched their head as to why. But
I continue to do that, actually.
But since this show is based in Washington, we know a little bit about presidencies. What does the Golf Writers Association president actually do?
Well, that's a good question. I guess a lot of things. You know, I run board meetings. We have a board meeting. We have two board meetings a year. The big one is at the Masters, where the entire board gets together on the Monday of Masters Week, and we talk about what we're going to be doing, the direction we want to take the organization to go in the next year. We have a scholarship program. We have a couple of scholarship programs, actually. Kohler Company funds one of the our scholarships. So I kind of shepherd that, and then we have a general meeting on the Wednesday of Masters Week. We have a dinner that I'm heavily involved in on the Wednesday night of Masters Week. And then I'm here to answer questions and troubleshoot when members have questions, or I try to direct members to the right place to go if they come at me with a question. And, you know, we have a board that's very helpful. Some people on the board really pitch in and do a lot of work. It's like any board, though. You know, there are some board members who don't do a lot of work. And so I'm always trying to get our board more engaged and more active.
Oh, excellent. Okay. I understand that one wholeheartedly. So lots of meetings. And so when you took the presidency, did you have thoughts on where you wanted to take the organization or how you could take it?
Well, we had just come through some trials and tribulation, I guess. We had to replace our secretary, and then Babs became our secretary. So Beth Ann Nichols kind of shepherded that process. She preceded me as president. And so then we got our officers, in line. And then I wanted to, we approached Kohler Company about funding a scholarship. I happened to sit next to David Kohler, the CEO of the Kohler Company, and the son of Herb Kohler, who built that wonderful golf empire up here in Whistling Straits, you know, just north of Milwaukee. And I pitched David on a Kohler Company funding scholarships for journalists who were interested, you know, college journalists studying to be journalists professionally and maybe wanting to get into golf journalism. So that was one thing we accomplished. So it's just I went to Rome a few years ago and did a walkthrough with the PGA of America on the Ryder Cup site, Marco Simoni. And then I wrote a report about, hotel accommodations, what riders could expect, how far they were from the course and that type of thing. So there's always a lot of little things to be done.
I'm glad you mentioned Bethann Nichols, which we did a little bit ago in this segment. Because when I talked to her at one time, she had this idea about the GWAA members getting involved with their alma mater, mine happened to be University of Maryland, and going there and kind of tutoring or I don't want to talk for her or misspeak, but the idea of going back to your alma mater and developing the future golf writers or golf broadcasters of the community.
Yeah, I think that that's a wonderful idea. That's something I think that we're still pursuing or going to pursue. But, you know, we've had some problems in our organization, frankly, and then, you know, the untimely and tragic passing of Babs, Jeff Babineau, has just thrown a wrench into everything right now. He meant so much to so many people personally, and he meant so much to our organization, and he's going to be very, very difficult to replace.
Yeah, so how's that process? So obviously, I mean, he hasn't been gone. Sorry, Babs, I'm not trying to give your job away. He hasn't been gone that that long, but he was very integral. I mean, I know the relationship that we developed over the years, and he would always clue me in on what was things going on, not that he would give me any inside. You know, I can't say why the president, I'm talking to the president of the GWAA, but there might have been some information I got that, you know, maybe I'm privy to, other people weren't privy to about what was going on. As far as the advancement of the organization. But there's, as you said, there's a guy that was an integral part, and it's so difficult to replace that position, period, but when you have a guy of that magnitude in that position. So how do you go forward, and what? How long is the process? Because the organization can't grind to a halt.
No, absolutely. And this is a tough time of year because we have our writing contest coming up, and we have a GWAA championship in a few weeks at in conjunction with the PGA Showdown in Orlando, and then we're preparing for our big dinner in Augusta, where we we have a dinner at the Columbia County Performing Arts Center that gets it's very well attended by movers and shakers in the golf business. That's where we honor our Players of the Year. So we're voting for our Players of the Year right now. We're voting for our special awards that we give out, and our writing awards are coming up. So it is. It's a busy time. And Jay Coffin, who is sort of our social media guru with the GWAA, is taking up some of Jeff's old duties. And we are going to have to advertise for a secretary in our organization, and we'll do that in our January newsletter. Hopefully we'll get some good resumes and some people who are interested, and then we'll have a board meeting, and we'll talk about the candidates and eventually interview a couple and pick one. So hopefully we're going to have a new secretary in place. I'm hoping sometime in February.
Wow, that's still a ways to wait on that. So, I didn't even realize you had to actually apply for the position.
Well, it's a paid position. So, it's not a lot of money, but it is a paid position. So we want to make sure we screen, and the person who takes the job has to be a member. We can't have somebody from outside the organization be a secretary. So hopefully we'll get some, some good resumes and some interest from within our organization of people who would like to do this job. It's a big job. The secretary has to do a monthly newsletter, has to coordinate, the Player of the Year voting, and work with the various tours on access. And we have committees also that deal with some of that stuff. But the secretary job it's a big job. And hopefully we'll find someone to take Babs's place, although he can't be replaced. I loved working with the guy. He was just always had a smile on his face, very helpful, and knew everybody in the industry, so well connected. So he will be tough to replace.
Yeah, big ray of sunshine for sure for Babs, and that's why we're part of why we're dedicating this show to him. Miss him already, and as a lot of people do, but I will miss seeing him in Orlando at the PGA Merchandise Show, and I certainly will miss him at the Masters meeting, at least on Wednesday. So when he's, pointing his arms and saying, "Here, let's go and let's do this," and that's just the way Babs operated. So that's good. It is tough for the organization, and you guys do a fantastic job, and I won't talk about it too much. My want for involvement during our time together on the air, but I certainly I'm interested in not being secretary. I'm interested in, doing additional things, for the organization, because I think a lot of the organization and you want to keep it going. You know, that's the thing, is the Golf Writers. No disrespect to Babs here, die away. We want to make sure that the organization keeps going, because I think it's important. And Alex and I actually were talking a little bit about that, because the coverage of tournaments these days, it's way down from Golf Writers and organizations and such. We stopped covering a lot of tournaments as well, just cost alone.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. In my own career, I was the golf writer at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for 28 years. I left the paper in 2018 just because of the way that newspapers were going. And I took a job with a company called Killarney Golf Media, and they have a website, which is just wisconsin.golf. All we do is, we have a very small staff, but we're pretty parochial. We cover golf in our state, and people say, is there enough to cover? Certainly there are. There's tons of stuff to cover with the amount of great courses we have with Erin Hills and Whistling Straits and the stuff going on at Sand Valley in the middle of our state. And there are 13 USGA championships coming to Wisconsin in the next 15 years. So we have plenty to write about. We cover all tournaments in the state. And people come to us for golf news now, because the newspapers, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and all the other papers in the state, barely mention golf at all. And I'm not talking about just tour stuff. I'm talking about big tournaments in our state that don't get covered. So we've carved out a niche, and we have a big readership. And now the WSGA, the Wisconsin State Golf Association, owns us. And so we work with them, and we've been very successful. And it's a model that I think could work in a lot of other states. I don't know. I think we're the only one doing it right now, but I think other states could benefit from this kind of thing.
Well, anytime the Golf Association purchases an entity like that, that speaks volumes to me anyway. You guys are doing quality work, and the state needs it, because there's a disconnect. We talk about professional golf, and those guys are splintered. And then you talk about amateur golf, and players aren't sure whether they should stay in college or they should go out and compete in the USGA events, or the youngsters coming up that want to be involved in this very lucrative or would be lucrative business of professional golf, playing golf. It's crazy where our society in general is from a golf standpoint.
It is. Yeah, there's so much going on so many levels. And, of course, in our state, we have, you know, Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly and Sherry Steinhauer and Andy North, a bunch of great players who are beloved in our state. And Steve Stricker is the host of a Champions Tour event in our state, the American Family Insurance Championship, which is going to become a team event in 2025, two-man team event. So there is no lack of stuff to write about in our state. We have a staff writer, Rob Hernandez, who covers juniors and high schools and colleges. And I guarantee you, nobody in America covers junior and high school golf like this guy does. So we definitely have a niche. We've got all the young golfers are on their phones checking our stories and what their friends are doing around junior golf in our state. So we've carved a little nice little niche for ourselves.
All right, but it's December. So what are you doing in December? Because I've been to Minnesota and Michigan in the wintertime, and I know Wisconsin is very similar. So I don't know what you guys do besides ice golf.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just wrote a story on our top 10 Wisconsin golf stories of the year that'll post on our website in a day or two here. Rob and I split up. The WSGA just announced its schedule for 2025. So we did schedule stories. Where are the tournaments going to be played? What about the courses they're played on? And then I do an occasional series called Wisconsin Legends of Golf. So I'll do a couple of those over the next few weeks. There's always something to write about, that's for sure, even in winter.
With Gary D'Amato, president of GWAA, we'll be back to wrap up the show.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
And we're back. It's a pleasure to spend a little bit of time with Gary D'Amato. He is the president of GWAA and one of the top writers at WisconsinGolf.com. I think I got that right. You know, it's in Wisconsin, it's, you know, an interesting state. It's the Badger State. Red and white. It's a good color scheme and such. You know, now, you know, when the realization came, when you're working for that renowned newspaper, I mean, for Milwaukee is obviously not America's largest city, but it is renowned for its beer and history and the brewers and such, and Bob Uecker, you know. So,
yeah.
Okay. So when you find out or you figure out, hey, I can't believe it, but I'm no longer going to have this kind of newspaper career. How do you pivot? What do you do?
Yeah, well, first of all, don't forget Happy Days, too. That's from Milwaukee. Exactly right. But, I saw where newspapers were headed, you know, 10 years ago, and it wasn't good. I was a columnist, and they weren't spending a lot of money sending me places. It's hard to be a good columnist when you're not around teams and you're not in locker rooms. I did cover a bunch of Olympic games and a bunch of Packer games, 200 Packer games, but I was being sent on the road less and less. And I knew that this Wisconsin.Golf had been launched in 2016. At the time, there was one writer. And I approached them and said, hey, I'm interested. If you guys are interested in having me, let's work something out. And thankfully, they were looking to expand, and they added me as a writer. And so I was just lucky. I was in the right place at the right time with that organization.
Oh, and you got ahead of the curve. That's important,
yeah,
too. And that's where we're at with technology. That's where we're at with the game of golf, the coverage of golf, the whole realm. You know, you have to kind of be a foreseer these days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's changing. So if you just look at what's happening on the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. I mean, you know, who knows how that's going to shake out, whether they go on together or apart. And now I see LIV Golf is being courted, or is courting anyway, Fox Sports. So we'll see if, you know, they'll finally get on a channel where people can tune in and watch. But yeah, golf is changing so quickly today with what's happening with the limited field events. And, you know, we've got a bunch of young pros in our state who are trying to make it onto the Korn Ferry Tour. But, you know, where do they go from there? How do they get access to the PGA Tour? There's golf is changing so fast and evolving right now.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what is happening. And you know, of course, Fox didn't have the greatest first go-round, you know, but they'd certainly like to be in there. I'm anxious to see what happens for my friend Keith Hirschland, who has been producing those broadcasts for LIV, and certainly like to get away from the CW, and which is a CBS product. So it's just, but you're not gonna get to the, you know, to the mountaintop doing that. So it's how things shake out, we don't know. But that's, you know, the PGA Tour there, Gary, you know, they've created this separation amongst the ranks, right? It used to be the top 125 players, right? And everybody had a chance. Now it's like the top 25 and everybody has fends for themselves.
Yeah, you know, I understand it, because it's, you know, a dozen or so players, maybe fewer than that, who really drive the tour, the names we all know. And so I understand, you know, every professional sport is driven by its superstars, whether it's the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and golf is no different. Their superstars drive the sport. So I can understand why they want to highlight those guys, and, you know, and I can understand why those guys want to be paid like superstars. I certainly understand that. But I think it's sad, you know, to see the guys who are 120th on the money list and at one time had a chance to advance and you know, become one of those superstars. And I think that road is much, much tougher to travel now.
Yeah, and that's the issue that I have, because it's one thing, and I said for many years, I'd rather go out and see the late, great Arnold Palmer shoot 100 than I would to watch some of these other guys. No disrespect for those guys up and coming. They're going to get their own and touch, but, you know, there's a big difference there. And I'm glad you mentioned Steve Stricker. He's one of my favorite all-time guys. I had an opportunity years ago when he was playing at Avenel in the Kemper Open, and happened to end up having dinner with him, and it was a great experience, a great person, and you know, always wish him the best, and I wish you the best, Gary, because it's been great to have you on the show. Really, really appreciate it. Gary D'Amato, president of GWAA, renowned writer. Check him out at wisconsin.gov, and you get you get your fill of Wisconsin. But, you know, we're a national show, so you listen to us and you get coverage all the way across the board. But we're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.